the races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Boy, it's the day you dread. It's one of the darkest days on the calendar, and I'm sure you have the same feeling. We're not exactly the same. I'm sure you know. Well, maybe you don't. Yes, Saratoga and Del Mar finished for the year, but that's not why. That's not why it's such a difficult day. It contributes. It's a difficult day, one of the toughest of the year, because it's the first day of school, and that means I got to get Tina up between 6 and 6:15. You cannot possibly imagine the misery that's involved. It's... Honest to God, it's like having a teenager, the moaning and the I don't want to get 15 more minutes. I mean, come on. Having not raised a child of my own, I guess I can live with this experience. I'm telling you, and then she's screaming, "Where's my coffee?" But then by the time we got her out the door, she was moving smoothly. It's like an older gelding that you send out there, and the first time around, kind of working out the kinks and stretching out and shaking the shoulders, and then nice and smooth the second time. It'll take a couple of days. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964 if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well. Well, indeed, yesterday brings to a close as intense a 4 days as I think we've ever really experienced, right? Because there's never been anything like it. When you grafted Oaks and Derby onto Labor Day weekend, this was really. I mean, you better have eaten your Wheaties to have gotten through this, and by the time those races were rolling around. The late races at Del Mar. I mean, I had had enough. I mean, I was really a little frustrated by the Saratoga Empire Six, which was far from impossible, but plenty difficult. And $20,000 if you got through it. So that, that a deserving return. And we'll get to that. I mean, there's so much that yet to get to. One of the more amazing stories, yes, just yesterday. I mean, we haven't even waded through. We got a little bit of the, Sunday stuff done yesterday with Mike Stidham's visit and also with Baffert, who you just listened to. I mean, I could have gone another half hour with Baffert, but. Princess Noor and Pixelate on Sunday, but really the story of yesterday, as part of the traditional season enders at Del Mar and Saratoga, the two grade ones for the boys, first the hopeful, and then later in the evening the futurity. And we'll talk about Jackie's Warrior was spectacular. I mean, that was jaw-dropping, honestly, to just blow away the other two major players and do it with such ease. That's what was stunning. And then Dr. Scheibel, which is a kind of a bittersweet story. And we probably won't get to Louis Mendez today, but it was the last start for Dr. Scheibel in Mendez's barn. And Hammer has told you about Mendez and his ability to prepare young horses and his, really his hallmark, his bread and butter. And, the horse is going to go to Mark Latt now, and the buy-in, the private acquisition for a controlling interest to Red Baron's Barn and Rancho Temescal, for Mendez, his first graded stake win of any kind. He'd won other stakes, but the first graded stake win, and it's a grade one. I made the note too that he's only been out training in his name for 3 years, but the first horse that has broken the $100,000 mark for him in earnings, and there's a lot of horsemen out there. We talk about this. There's a lot of operations that they're doing this. They're getting young horses together, whether it's for clients or some that the horses for whatever reason didn't necessarily sell through, and so you get them started and they draw the interest, and that it's a very good way to make a living and score, actually. So I know some people were like, oh, it's too bad. Yes and no. I mean, it's a little too bad, but Mendez, I'm sure, just thrilled, and we'll look forward to connecting with him. Well, maybe late today, but I would guess it's always tough the day after Saratoga and Del Mar wrap up, and then of course in Kentucky, there's the added wrinkle of the sale tomorrow and Thursday at Fasig, and then of course everybody getting ready for Keeneland next week. So there's all kinds of added mayhem, and we'll talk to Brad Cox, who we missed yesterday. Brad's going to join us in exactly 8 minutes, right at 9:15. We'll get 15 minutes in with Brad Cox before he goes back to the sales grounds and continues to shop. And, of course, you heard Baffert talk about it as well, as they scout out this crop of yearlings. On that topic, back to yesterday's headlining story. And it's our sponsor. It's our Kentucky farm that Hill and Dale is the story. Jackie's Warrior by McLean's Music and Dr. Scheibel by Violence. That's a remarkable double. As two stallions under 25,000 each, Violence has had a spectacular year, obviously. But for McLean's Music, a very nice score at a perfect time leading into the sale. And especially because, and from a personal note, we've got the McLean's Music that we're partnered up with Dave Scanlon and Marty Shapiro, that McLean's Music we talked about at Timonium, and doing great at Belmont. And preparing for a debut. So we've got a McLean's Music, so we're excited. And excited from that performance. 95 buyer, by the way, if you hadn't seen the number. This is a two-year-old posting a 95 buyer and doing it, not that geared down means anything. This is for the Robesons, Kirk and Judy Robeson. And wow. I mean, just a, literally a eye-popping performance. And in a lot of ways, Dr. Scheibel's win and the horse of Baffert's that Spielberg ran good. But you could tell, if you just listened to Baffert just now, you could tell he knew that he wasn't winning. He was very respectful, and you could tell, basically was acquiescing to Dr. Scheibel. But Spielberg ran nicely to be second. But Dr. Scheibel clearly best and a very, again, notable double for Hill and Dale. And, of course, Curlin too, earlier, right, Saturday. Looking forward to Stanley Huff soon to talk about global campaign. The action, not just at Saratoga and Del Mar, obviously, but the Kentucky Downs kickoff, and there were some opening day there were some opening day jitters, to say the least. the weird situation with the gate popping, and it I know, you know, the assumption was that they let the gate go before horses, everybody had loaded. It doesn't appear that that's what happened. It appears that the magnets released, and, you know, whether, because the starter wasn't even in position, who knows, something electronic. And this seems to happen, you know, once every couple of years where, you know, the gate, the latches go and, you know, somehow get triggered. And you know, you know what it is, it's a magnetic field, and the magnetic field is, you know, is dropped, and that's what opens the gates. So that fifth race yesterday declared a non-starter, and luckily, you know, because a lot of horses and riders weren't necessarily ready, and then they went into it, they launched into the, you know, into the running, and you know, the logical thing to do was to declare it a no contest. And that's, you know, one of the options. And then Kentucky Downs, in fact, I talked to Hammer last night about it, and Hammer said he remembers being at, whether, I didn't remember if he said Santa Anita or if it was back when he was at Monmouth, but I think Santa Anita. And he said that happened, and you know, they compensate, the riders all get something, and the connections all, you know, get a stipend, and they'll try perhaps to tack that same race on one of the last two cards, the cards that on the back end that haven't been drawn. They've drawn three or four. So there is an opportunity to run that race again, if need, you know, if possible. And then, yeah, the usual interesting results and numbers and, the big feature in that tourist mile, Chad Brown sending out, Flavius to Kentucky Downs, and Flavius with Castellano, takes that tourist mile. And there was a nice, there's a nice story actually as part of it. And Flavius, and Stapper Sinclair essentially were headlong to the wire, set a course record too. The juvenile races, Christophe Clement with that Plum Alley, who we saw at Saratoga in July, this one for the Powerhouse Partnership, Dub, Matticat, and Bethlehem, Mike Caruso. But the really nice story here, and we'll have to reach out for Michael Ewing, because she sent out Bantry Farms, Artie Schiller, Gelding, Barrister Tom, 44-1, Tyler Bays, and, you know, with authority, won well. Barrister Tom, $90 winner. the Artie Schiller, bred by Tom Girardi. So congratulations to Michael. And we haven't talked to her since, I think, right when she launched her career. And does a good job. That's a big win. It's a big win. A $500,000, the more than ready juvenile. And then that other stake, the one dreamer, Al Stahl for Balmar, and the German bred Dalica with Miguel Mina. Miguel rides that course well, and Dalica, you know, sat behind the harmless pace setter, literally harmless, and then took over and wins the one dreamer. So underway at Kentucky Downs, to be back on Wednesday and Thursday yet. Plenty to do, a lot to do. And Brad Cox is going to join us here momentarily, in case you could reach for Brad. And while we do that, got to mention the results at Laurel yesterday, too, because it was important. Happy Saver wins the Tessio at a very short price and, you know, seems set to move on toward Preakness. Trevor McCarthy riding 1-5 for the Wertheimer's Super Saver Colt, homebred of theirs. And really has done absolutely nothing wrong so far. Happy Saver, 3-for-3. And second in there was Monday Morning Quarterback. Good to see him back. I hadn't seen him since the Withers. And Butchie Reed's going to join us probably in hour three this morning. We'll talk to Butch about the spinaway win with Vequist. Also a timely win for Nyquist, getting the first grade one winner. And Gary Barber, communicated with Gary, who was excited about the prospects for Vequist and didn't necessarily expect a win in there. But she won, and she was as good in there as Jackie's Warrior was in the boys' race. Brad Cox joins us after a tremendous Oaks Derby weekend and 3-year-old fillies and then 4-year-old fillies and 5-year-old mares in Brad Cox's hands. Very, very dangerous as Friday's big pairing in the Oaks, She Dares the Devil, makes one more step forward. Monomoy Girl, perfect in the La Troyenne. And then even on Saturday, Brad comes back with Slam Dunk's Beau Recall, and she gets one of those long time between drinks wins in the Turf Mile. Brad, congratulations on just a sterling weekend.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, not at all. You know, the dialogue, obviously, in the Oaks going in, it was very clear, and you acknowledged it too. And whenever I saw anything that you had said, and that was that the headline marquee matchup of Gamine and Swiss Skydiver, with Speech kind of emergent, but the whole time the alternate suggestion was She Dares the Devil, because if she took one more step forward, she was going to be competitive. Talk about the thoughts going in and then what transpired.
Yeah, I mean, going into the race, you know, we felt, watching her train, and, you know, she's a really good workhorse. She gives you everything of the mornings that you want to see, and she's obviously not disappointed us in the afternoon. She's been, you know, very, very good all year, and she wasn't winning it, you know, at the grade one level coming into this race, although she hadn't had the opportunity. I think her race at Oaklawn in the fantasy, really, really speed favoring track that day. The two horses that ran 1-2 just kind of got away, and everybody else was just left behind. So I guess, you know, that was kind of it was a third place effort, but it was a little bit of a blemish on her PPs as far as, you know, seeing what she stacked up against, how she stacked up against horses like Swiss Skydiver and Venetian Harbor. But, you know, she looks the part. You know, walking into the paddock the other day, I happened to be standing right outside. Most all the fillies had walked past us. And, you know, she looked amazing. I mean, not that the other fillies didn't, but I thought she definitely looked like she fit with them from a physical standpoint as well. And obviously during the Oaks Derby training of the mornings, you know, she was moving fantastic. I thought, you know, I had a couple of people tell me, you know, she looks as good as anyone out there training. So she was primed and ready to go. And, you know, she's been very, very good all year. She's like I said, a very, very good filly to train. She gives, you know, you can get what you want out of her. Work 2 weeks ago here before the Oaks was fantastic. So we're expecting a big effort out of her, and she gave it to us.
There's also an interesting side to this, because it was clear, you know, Florent Giroux, who has established that with a horse with speed, with natural speed, he's going to put them in the race. But to consciously not attack, but to sort of hound, at least moderately hound Gamine, and stay in constant contact, you know, knowing that there was potential for her to really, you know, really wing it and potentially gut anybody that was going to chase. I mean, the splits were very, very even. I won't say it was slow. It wasn't fast. They were. You know, they were racehorse splits, 23-1, 47-4, 112, 135-4, 148-1. And how much of that was by design, you know, knowing, you know, where you were lining up and being outside, you know, the two major players, essentially?
Yeah, I thought, honestly, I'm going to give Florenta credit there. I kind of thought we might be tracking a few more, as opposed to being right there. We were in the office the other day kind of looking at the race, and I was trying to figure out the pace scenario with the filly, Swiss Scott, ever on the inside, drawing the rail. And,
right.
Ultimately it depends on how what they want to do. But we figured Gamine would be on the favorite, or on the lead, and, you know, we would be laying third, fourth. When it unfolded the way it did, I was like, this is fantastic. And I kind of agree with you. I mean, very reasonable fractions for those type of fillies at that level. And turning up the backside, Florent had a lot of horse, and I said, you know, he's got this filly in a perfect position. If she can't win from here, she can't beat these fillies, bottom line. And you know, obviously it unfolded great down the lane. She held off Swiss Scotter. Actually, I thought we were going to have to hold her off, but then late, you know, she was kind of putting her away. I mean, and then I think it showed in the gallop out. I mean, she was a fresh filly that had plenty of time since the Indiana Derby and was ready to run and ran her A race.
Very much so. And it gets a big career best figure. And yesterday I talked about the when you look at the pattern, you looked at the, I'm just using Thoroughgraph, and actually on Buyer 2, she had what is identified as a really healthy development pattern in terms of reaching a new career best, then pairing up, then moving forward, pairing up. That is super healthy development in a 3-year-old, and she only had to take the next step, and she did. How did she come out, and how do you angle toward the distaff out of here? Does she, you know, do you face the elders first in the spinster, or what's your thoughts?
Well, you know, we're going to get her back to the track tomorrow. Very happy with how she came out of it, and probably, you know, get her back to the track, make sure everything looks good. She does look good, you know, jogging on the road of the mornings. We're going to get her back, start jogging her tomorrow, and then turn around and gallop her in a couple days. But she's, we'll talk, you know, see how she's moving, then talk it over with the owners. I think the spinster would be an option. The Beldame would be an option. And then, obviously, if you were to look at those two, you know, if all went well there, you could possibly look, you know, the Breeders' Cup. That would be the year-end goal, and, you know, possibly give her an opportunity if with another victory or, you know, a couple more victories, champion 3-year-old filly. But, you know, first and foremost, we're going to kind of watch her and let her kind of tell us over the next week if that's something we want to pursue or not.
Well, another Oaks for you, and of course earlier Monomoy Girl. How about a quick synopsis of her progress?
She doesn't let us down. I mean, she's very, very honest. I told someone the other day, I don't like running her though. It's very stressful to watch her run. Just once you kind of leg the rider up, and she's the only filly I get nervous for. I can tell you that, or she's the only horse I get nervous for. Period. I mean, I wanted to kind of be over with in a hurry. I mean, I enjoy it, but it is somewhat stressful. She means the world to us. She's obviously been with us a long time, and she, like I said, I mean, she just means the world, and honestly, words cannot describe, the joy she gives us, and for her to be able to pick off a grade one at the age of five, and what she's been through from since Breeders' Cup of 18, this has been a long road. You know, once again, credit goes to the ownership, Saul Coombe and Mike Dubb, Mike Caruso and Stuart Grant for just giving us the opportunity, or, you know, staying with her and you know, not giving up, and true sportsmanship on, you know, people are so quick to pull these horses, especially fillies, colts, with stud value out of training so quick, and I think it's great for the game. I mean, you know, to have these top caliber horses continue on to their 4 or 5 year old year, and you know, with her, she's rewarded them in a big way, and you know, she's an unbelievable mare.
Well, you mentioned also when you referenced the ownership, we should take a second and go back to She Dares the Devil, because for Staten Fleury and then the additional, you know, the partners that you know, the jacket was certainly the Qatar jacket, the Burgundy and Big Ott. Quick reference to you know, the ownership team behind She Dares.
Yeah, no, obviously, Qatar here in America, Fergus Galvin kind of heads that group here in America. And, you know, and obviously, Staten Fleury has been a client for a long time. You know, he's playing at a high level now. They're great clients. I mean, they just, you know, let you do your thing, let you train your horse. And they're just great guys to deal with. And you know, just very, very happy for them to be able to get a grade one with Staten. I know. Obviously, Sheikh Fahd has tasted that several times, racing throughout the country, or throughout the world, I should say. And for Staten to get a grade one with, you know, Mr. Misunderstood was his first big horse. We still have him, and he's you know, back in form and doing extremely well. And, you know, that was his first taste of, you know, winning graded stakes. And now for him to get a grade one is huge.
Well, and the rest of the action, so much, you know, so much a part of the whole weekend. And there was one scenario that played out that probably was not to everybody's liking. That was in the Eight Bells, the first of Friday's stakes for you and the weekend stakes. And the concern going into that race was that Four Graces and Monday Call for you and Florent would hook up, and that could open the door to a late run, and the logical late runner was Greg Foley's Wisconsin, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, you know, obviously we knew we were going to be up close. We knew there was going to be a hot pace, just not quite that hot. You know, it just didn't unfold, and well, you know, just didn't unfold the way we needed it to for our filly. She did come out of the race in good order. She actually went back to the track today and looks fine. So we'll give her a chance, an opportunity to catch her breath. I think she was running back in 26 days off of a big effort at Ellis. And you know, with that pace, I'm not going to say she bounced, because with that pace, I just can't see her.
No, they just got that.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we'll give her time to recover from that. She looks good. She's a nice filly, and I do think she's a great at stake filly for sure. At some point in her career, she's going to hopefully pick one off.
Well, and that division has really kind of rounded out the filly and mare sprint division, the addition of the three-year-olds and mixing in with the elders. That was sort of an undefined division. And even Come Dancing lifted her head up over the weekend, too, for Carlos Martin. So that division has taken kind of a new shape. Got to quickly slip in before we talk about Beau Recall, because we're tight for time. But I do want to mention Owendale, who absolutely, to me, made some sense as an exotic player, and you got to be very pleased with that effort. It was sneaky good on the weekend.
It was. You know, soft pace up front. Florent did a good job of, you know, putting him where he needed to be. Was beaten by a very, very good horse. I think that horse is one of the best horses in the country. Two turns on the dirt, but one of the better handicap horses in the country. And our horse was right there with him. I was very proud of him. He bounced back after the dull effort in the Stephen Foster. And, you know, I was big for Jim Rupp to get him back in good form. He's been lightly raced this year, mostly because of the COVID situation. But, you know, he came out of in good shape and give us the confidence to, you know, attack another stake here in the near future.
Let's talk about Saturday and, you know, Beau Recall. It's kind of interesting in that Distaff Turf Mile, which is always a bellwether and always a you know, an important race for the filly and mares going a mile. to me, if somebody going in it was going to beat newspaper of record, it was your other filly, Juliet Foxtrot, and then Beau Recall, who you know has certainly run well, but hadn't won in a year. She ends up getting a tremendous job by Manny Franco. I thought that was to go to go out in space and run down newspaper of record takes some doing.
Yeah, he did a fantastic job. You know, that was a race that in the whole turf course that whole day played maybe two Beau Recalls lightning going up the backside. You know, they wasn't going that fast, I didn't think. But I did notice they were spread out pretty good. And, you know, I thought turning for home, Juliet Foxtrot was making her run. And you could kind of tell she wasn't quite getting into her. I think she struggled just a touch with the turf that day. And then Beau Recall, once Manny tipped her out, well, my only instruction I gave him was ride her like Irad did last year. Save ground and tip her out, and he did exactly that. And it worked out really well. She obviously likes this turf course. And, you know, honestly, she's not a big filly. She's somewhat on the smaller side. And we sent her to California, and we were super excited about running her out there. She'd won that race the year before the Yellow Ribbon, and we thought, you know, she's going to be ever bit as good this year going into it as she was last year, and just really just didn't get any opportunity to run. We lost ground around both turns, had maybe one horse beat going into the first turn with no pace, and I thought, you know, I'll bring her back off of her a little bit, and I watched her for like 2 days. I was like, this horse doesn't need to be backed off of. She needs a train. And her first work out of California was fantastic on the dirt. And I thought, I told Nick Quesada and Philip Shelton, I said, you know, I think probably need to look at running this filly pretty quick. She's on it. And she responded well. She was doing really, really well going into this race Saturday.
Yeah, and a big win for Slam Dunk and Partners. We should also mention Factor This. You had to be happy. You know, it looked like there was going to be a lot of pace pressure, and Factor This did everything but withstand the late run. So you got Chad once, and then Chad got you.
Yeah, no doubt. It was a big effort on his behalf, and you know, very proud of that horse. I mean, he gives it to you every time. He's been a solid. Been an unbelievable claim. We claimed him a couple summers ago at Saratoga, and he's just a very consistent horse, and he's gotten better with age, and he's had a fantastic year. And ran a big race the other day. I thought Bridge Mahan put him in a great position, maybe just a touch too much pressure up front, but really, really fought on and ran a big race. Race was very pleased with him.
Well, and we should also be pleased. I saw a bunch of maiden winners over the last several days, including at Churchill during the week on Pearl and Travel Column, Essential Quality. Looks like there's something there. Arlington, you won one. Verrazano in the Sky. And before I ask you about this week at Kentucky Downs in Indiana, the unfortunate circumstance around Break Even, who bled in her try and was instantly retired by Richard Klein. I felt bad about that.
Yeah, for sure. That was and you know, no history of bleeding in her past at all. And I was watching the race on the big screen in the paddock at Churchill, and unfortunately, I could kind of see Sean, you know, asking her, kind of falling out of the race, and he slapped her on the shoulder a couple times, and I was like, something's amiss, you know. And then immediately I could see like her bleeding, and I was like, oh, this is no good. Obviously, he got her pulled up as quick as he could, and you know, obviously she's a class mare that's deserves the best, and she's going to get the best, and you know, we'll retire her, and hopefully she'll make some babies that are as fast as she is, and if they are, Richard Klein will be in a good spot because she's an extremely talented filly with a ton of speed.
Quick couple of notes, too. Coming up this week and looking at tomorrow at Indiana in the Tappet, you've got Vanbrugh, and then coming back on Thursday in the Rich Dueling Grounds Derby, the Gunrunner Dueling Grounds Derby, Caninos comes back. Some thoughts about the pair and the stakes in the next couple of days.
Vanbrugh, I don't believe is going to draw in. He's four on the AE, so I think we're probably going to unfortunately have to set that one out. But Caninos is doing well. We're running him back quick. It was kind of part of the plan. He ran against Alders last week at Indiana. He's somewhat of a lazy horse. We can't get a whole lot out of him sometimes working him, so we thought we would just give him a spin around the Indiana Oval up there last week. He performed well, was closing late, and this looks like a good spot for him. I think he's going to really, really enjoy the distance. That's really the biggest thing with him, is this mile and 5/16 should really, really fit him well.
Are both horses running in this maiden race today? At Indiana, just so obedient and kind of lucky.
Kind of lucky, yes. Both are running.
And both, what do we like better?
Both are doing well. Kind of lucky. It's going to be our first opportunity to run her on the grass. We tried to get her on it last time. It came off. So we're hoping she can move forward on the grass. And then the end of Mr. Philly, she drew the outside disobedient. She's doing well. She acts like she puts a good bit into her mornings. Training of the mornings and is training well. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if she was capable of winning first time.
You're looking for diplomas as well on Wednesday, and you got a pair entered there, 5-1 on the 2-1 by 1 with Manny Esquivel, and Pharaoh's Gold 4-1 with Fernando de la Cruz, same pair of jocks, and first time start for 1 by 1, but put the lace, put the blinkers on Pharaoh's Gold.
Yeah, you know, she's this will be, we obviously tried her on the dirt last time, or it was off the turf race, so I think she will improve on second time on the turf. I think that's what she's going to want. And then obviously 1 by 1, first time, or she's doing well. She trains well enough to be able to win first time. She's a big, strong, strapping filly. We do think she's probably going to handle the turf a little more than she does the dirt, but she's trained well enough to win first time as well. So I think both of them are set up for big efforts.
And on Thursday, let's round it out. Flamingo Hawk, 9-5 favorite as a debuter with De La Cruz in the fourth. And you also have got Mission Canyon looking to graduate as well. This one with De La Cruz, 7-2 in the ninth.
Mm-hmm. Both are doing well. Obviously, Flamingo Hawk is a two-year-old. He's a really, really good-looking horse for Peachtree. Maybe struggled a little bit of the mornings with the dirt. We're thinking that the candy ride will come through, and you know, the grass will pick him up a little bit. Beautiful horse. Like I said, been training well. And Mission Canyon, unraced Uncle Mo, three-year-old that we started and stopped this horse a couple times, but he seems to have his feet underneath of him moving forward right now. So we finally got him to the races, and we, you know, it's taken us a couple tries, start and stop efforts in order to get him there. But he's finally there, and he's trained well enough in the morning, so hopefully he'll show up.
Brad Cox, as always, we went a little further, only 7 minutes further. Sometimes it's 27 minutes further. We only went a little further than expected. I know you're heading to the sale, and how did it look yesterday? How was the traffic out there at Fasig yesterday?
Yeah, I was there for a few hours, and there was a good few people there. So it looked like, you know, as far as getting in, you know, you needed your virtual badge and temperature checks and whatnot. So they had it, you know, well secured, but there was several people there. The parking lot was pretty full, and you know, plenty of action at the barn. So yeah, we got one more day of looking, and then the show begins tomorrow.
Outstanding. Well, you put on a show with the runners over the Derby Oaks weekend. Another Kentucky Oaks in the coffers, and I'm sure you'd like to have a companion. A companion gold trophy, a couple of Oaks, is maybe it's time to get a Derby.
Yeah, no doubt. That's definitely the goal. So I just got to keep working and attending sale and training horses.
I love it. Brad, well done. Congratulations to to everybody, Florent involved, and obviously it's going to be a busy fall and a busy next couple of weeks between Fasig and then next week the big sale at Keeneland. And coming right back, you got horses going at Kentucky Downs in Indiana, and then come back to Churchill and Keeneland and everything else. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Sounds good, Steve. Talk to you soon. Thanks.
Brad Cox, everybody, and Brad Cox Racing on Twitter. We're going to stay right here, and we got a rare opportunity and kind of a fun treat because Derek Lawson is driving Flavian Pratt and Umberto Rispoli to the airport because they're headed to Kentucky for Kentucky Downs starting tomorrow. And the two of them, I hope they're both in the back seat and that one of them isn't going to arrive ahead of the other because they put on a tremendous battle into yesterday at Del Mar and really all summer long. And we've talked about Umberto's tremendous season, but when it came down to winning the riding title, it went to Flavian Pratt. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, good morning, Steve. We're on Century Boulevard, so you better make it quick. We're going to the airport.
All right, well, good morning. And first of all, let me get Flavian in. Flavian, congratulations on the writing title.
Thank you.
Talk about the summer a little bit. You closed it out with the win on Madone and of course, Dr. Scheivel for Louis Mendez. And what a wonderful thing it is for him to get his first graded stake and grade one.
Yeah, no, overall it's been a great meet. We pitched a stake recall, so that was nice. And as you said, I thought it was great for Luis Mendez, who's doing a tremendous job with 2 years old, and he really knows how to get them ready for a race. So I thought it was really good for him.
And talk about the summer overall for you, and then we're gonna also slip in, what it was like to have Umberto kind of pushing you as well. And, you know, it doesn't mean any extra money, but winning riding titles, when guys get into the Hall of Fame, they talk about how many riding titles at places like Del Mar. Talk about the competition this summer.
You know, it's been a great competition. I thought Umberto ride some great races, and it was a great meet. It started a little bit warmly, but then once we get back to normal, it was really nice, and I thought it was a great competition. It could have gone either way. Fortunately for me, I had some good mounts the last day, so it turned out my way, but overall, it was great.
Well, and the weekend also included winning on Saturday, winning the John Mabee for Phil D'Amato on Raimundo's Secret, plus a couple of very nice maiden winners, that 10 for 10 yesterday. And I know that Superman Shaq they're excited about. Talk to Gary Barber. And let me bring in Umberto Rispoli. And Umberto, we talked to Ron Anderson last week, ahead of Derby and Oaks, and he introduced you to the wider audience, and he was heartsick to have to let you go as your agent. But the display you've put on this summer has been just astounding. So congratulations to you and to Scotty.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Talk a little bit about about adjusting, and it did seem that after Ron and you separated, it took a little bit for you to kind of get your momentum back.
Yeah, obviously wasn't easy for me because I was just coming to the country, and when Ron gave me that news, obviously I was a little bit lost, but finally I to meet Scotty, and he was with no jockeys, so that was a great opportunity for me. And I would not say struggling at the beginning, but we have to build up everything from zero. And I think we've done an amazing job in Del Mar with 49 winners for my first summer meet. I think it's an unbelievable result, and I'm very happy with that.
As you should. And one of the things that's unique about Del Mar, with so much turf racing, adjusting to that turf course and how quickly you seized on the timing and when to launch a bid and having a feel, the ride you put on Pixelate, it happened that Mike Stidham was on TV with us on Sunday, and he said one of the reasons that he even sent Pixelate to California was because he could get you, that for you to get up in that race, that was unbelievable.
Well, it was good for me. It was, like I say, I was I was pleased to ride for him and to wear Godolphin for the first time. I mean, in the Derby, it was a great opportunity. The horse, I think, was the best horse in the race. It probably wasn't the strongest Derby ever we haven't seen in Belmar, but the horse, it was easy to ride. He was prepared very well. I put him in the right spot. The pace was on, and everything went well for me. So, you know, this kind of situation in Del Mar, it's a tiny track. The grass is different from every other tough course in the country. So it's a track, and then you want to save ground, you want to ride a better race, but obviously you need the horse to do that.
No doubt. You also, of course, earlier in the meet, too, we should mention the ride on Red King to win the Del Mar handicap. Time and again, you kept posting those kinds of timely rides. How much, I'm going to ask both of you, how much are you watching each other? Because, you know, as the summer went on, obviously it became clear in those races, particularly the grass, you know, that you were on the top horses. So how much are you watching Flavian? And Flavian, how much are you watching Umberto?
Well, I mean, I thought it was definitely a good idea to follow him in any race, because, you know, obviously it sounded like he knew where he was going. But no, and like you said, we were, you know, most of the time on the best horses, so you definitely want to keep an eye on your rival. Well, it was fun. We was looking for each other every race, but we have so much respect for one of each other. We spend almost all meet together, preparing ourselves together, so we know each other very well. And even in the race, you know, we don't give any favor between each other, but we respect a lot each other. And you know, when we sit on the race, both of us, we want to win. So I think we put a nice show. No matter what, I mean, I told to Flavin yesterday, on Sunday, whatever is going to win for me, I was already pleased with my meeting. So I knew that he got a better shot on Monday, but that's how he says he could go either way. He goes in his way, and well done to him. So
absolutely.
Well, you know, hey, Steve, real quick.
Yeah.
Steve, real quick. Over at the, because there were no fans, but over at the Orange County Tavern in San Clemente, there were actually two groups. There was a Pratt group and the Rispoli group, and they were yelling at each other when the one was winning and one wasn't winning. So it's really too bad that there were no fans at Del Mar, because it would have really been something special all summer long.
No, there's no doubt. And Umberto, you mentioned the the tightness of Del Mar makes me think about your time in Hong Kong and the differences between Sha Tin and Happy Valley.
Yeah, I mean, Del Mar is a kind of Happy Valley, just in the opposite side, in opposite way to go. It's a tiny track, but Happy Valley, I mean, like, Hong Kong is different because you're riding in a handicap race, so you have to really save ground over there. When you carry the same weight, it's a different story, but that for sure helps.
Steve, we got to go. We got here at the airport. We got to go, babe.
All right, guys. Umberto Rispoli, and you follow Umberto at Umbi Rispoli. And thanks to Frank Miramati for making sure we all knew how to pronounce Umberto's last name properly. Guys, good luck. Good luck in Kentucky. Flavian Pratt, who we have so much fun talking to. We couldn't get in any harness conversation with him, but they're on their way to Kentucky Downs after a tremendous summer rivalry that will carry on when they get back to Santa Anita later in the month and into the fall. That was fun. And we thank Derek Lawson for making that possible as I guess getting on time to LAX is now a lot easier because there's so much less traffic around. And so there we go. Thanks a lot, Derek. And guys, safe travels.
Thank you. Thank you.
Go. You got it. Umberto Rispoli and Flavian Pratt from Italy and France. And at least for Rispoli, you know, through Hong Kong, and what a great addition he has been to the West Coast riding colony, big time. We got a couple of minutes till the top of the hour. Jay Privman is going to join us in a little bit, and I We've got Butchie Reed yet, and also a visit with Neil Pessin coming. But rather than shoehorn it in, I'm going to wait. We got about 7 minutes before we take our we'll take two breaks today. Actually, we're going to take some summer music interludes instead of taking commercial breaks as we end the summer. So before Jay Privman joins us, let's actually dig in a couple other results. And since the jockey title race. Part of the storyline that emerged yesterday, not just at Saratoga, Del Mar, but at Saratoga as well, because the Ortizes were going down to the wire, and Irad ends up taking the writing title, Todd Pletcher the training title, and Seth Klarman with another Saratoga owner's title. And one part of the training title part, there's quite a few horses that, that Seth and, Seth Klarman and, other Brown owners have given, to Jorge Abreu and, who had a terrific, I think he won 8-9 races. At least he might have. I lost track the last while I was in Kentucky, but I think had. In fact, I can tell you right away because I know he had a horse right in the nightcap Staradesis, which is some sort of legal term I know, but I don't know what. Not sure what the actual meaning is. Nine. He had 9 wins going into yesterday. For George. And by the way, that nightcap, that was okay. Sir Chubby. I thought Sir Chubby, it's one of those spots where you got to make those decisions. When it comes to the multi-race, it's tough when you got a horse that's 0 for 11 and facing off against some that are, that are not yet career maidens. And that whole race was kind of thrown into a tizzy when Gunman scratched and the other Pletcher sees the hay, drew in and, sees the hay really was kind of blah. And, anyway, the sequence yesterday, a quick review of that, before we break. And there's actually a couple of stories we got to dig into here. For starters, that last I didn't even mention yesterday, which is not like me, they got that last handicap race over the hurdles in yesterday at the start and early, 11:30 went off. And Iranistan, Jonathan Shepherd and Hudson River, they end up the season with a win. Before the sequence started, the pick six, and I'll discuss this with Andy tomorrow, probably. That seventh race maiden, and I mentioned the Scat Daddy sibling, who I made the best value second choice, the Godolphin Homebred out of Love Style, the Tappet Filly. And she wins. However, and it was nice, 21.80 and all. However, probably should have come down and... this is one where, this is why I personally never get worked up about DQs. You can argue the merits of them and the rules that are involved. But, from a betting standpoint, if you either get put up or don't get taken down when you probably should have, you just hope that you hope over the course of your life as a player that you get one more that goes your way versus same with the photos. You hope you get one more photo than not. And the same thing with this. Thank you, Case. Thank you for Case looked it up. That Staradesis is a legal argument based on precedent. There we go. So You learn. There's something to learn every single day. but anyway, Lovestruck stays up, and the interference came with Mrs. Frankel. And by definition, you know, the rule got circulated right away by the stewards. And so, you know, Mrs. Frankel might not have been winning, but did the interference, did it cost her a placing? How do you not conclude that she finished fifth. How do you not conclude that, you know, she could have had a better placing? I mean, she sort of, you know, lost action and just sort of, you know, just sort of jogged in. So I don't know. That I think we got a little lucky being able to take anything home out of that. The pick six sequence before we pause, the start, the Teen Merchants was certainly one of the ones that could win. I mean, that part wasn't at issue. I picked him third, and I tried to sneak through that Speaker's Corner, who came in with a big work tab, you know, positives, and just had a bad start. Came running late under Junior, but 3-5 was ridiculous. How that horse was why that horse would be 3-5 in a bit of a good looking group. I don't know. That was a little over the top. I also thought Savoy, Chad's runner, had for Peter Brandt, had real quality potentially to offer. So I tried to tiptoe through, and that was a mistake. And Team Merchants, with authority. Kendrick Carmouche with Santana out of town. Kendrick Carmouche getting a chance on the Asmussen runner. Not Asmussen. That was Doug O'Neill, right? Yeah, Doug O'Neill. I'm sorry. The Redham Homebred. Nyquist out of a Square Eddie mare. That really is a Redham Homebred. So the sequence starts with, you know, third or maybe fourth most logical at a glance, $14. And then from there, Kuchina. Kuchina was also my third choice. He wins, pays $10.80. But now you've got two favorites, one under 2-1. I'm a Pharaoh, and the 3-5 Speaker's Corner, both failing. Scano, great job by Nick Tamaro to put you on Scano, who won with authority. And, you know, for all the Ortiz, competition in terms of the riding title, if Luis Saez had been there the whole meet, Luis Saez would have won that riding title. Scano, Mr. Kringle, who I think went favored, a little over 2-1. The horse that I thought was really kind of jumped at me, Quarterback Dak, really never lifted a hoof. He stunk, and so that pretty much killed my big multis for the rest of the meet. Proven Strategies, who's been nice, beats Elders here in the allowance for Mark Cassie and the Greens and the Empire Racing Club. Aaron Yagoda, big part of getting this horse as part of the Empire team, and nice win for Proven Strategies to close out the season. And that was another $10 plus, $12.60. Then you had Jackie's Warrior, who did go off a second choice. So no favorites in the entire sequence. $5.70 on Jackie's Warrior. And then, as we talked about, Sir Chubby. And we got close to 7-1 on the Chubby Meister. And Vicarage, second in here, who didn't take money at all. Took next to no money. I picked Vicarage and did okay in here, closed out the season with a nice exacta to say goodbye to Saratoga for the summer. And the favorite ended up being that the George Weaver horse Bull Jim, and actually 5-2. Why Bull Jim took that much money? I can't tell you. You know, Nick and I talked about him, but 5-2, that was crazy. And he got overhauled late by Sir Chubby, and then Vicarage Rosario arrived late on the scene. At least he arrived, as opposed to what he did to us on Saturday. Those that got through the sequence, 20,000. Great way to end the season. And we'll end the hour with a little bit of music, and one we always seem to play on Tuesday. And when we come back on the other side, Jay Privman's going to join us. But unfortunately, our sweet summer is gone.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Summer's gone, and on my mind she made it clear her lipstick can't be wrong. My summer, summer, my sweet summer is gone. My sweet summer is gone.
Warm was the weather outside the day we met. Blue was the color of skies the day she left. Short was the time we had, it was the best. Cause long were the nights we spent with no rest. I met her on a Friday, she left on a Monday. Wrote me a letter, said she hoped to see me someday. We had a good time, I can't deny that. You could be my sunshine every time you try that.
There's another one, you're loving, and I hate to see you go. My sweet summer's gone, she left me here with sand in my bed. She played me all night long, but I do it all over again. Summer is gone. My sweet summer is gone.
Yeah, she left in the morning, gone without warning. Fun while it lasted, lost in the moment. She played me real good, took me for a ride. Now she's out fun and never playing back to real life. Then she dipped out, smoked on my weed, then she flipped out. Left in my slumber, waited till I passed out. And on my dresser was a paper and her number. I filled it up with grass and I burned it for summer.
Cause there's another one.